Johnny presents the Philip Morris Crime Doctor. Here comes Johnny, ladies and gentlemen, in his red coat and brass buttons. Johnny, stepping out of store windows and counters all over America to introduce the Philip Morris Crime Doctor program to all you people at home, as well as our men and women in service, wherever this program reaches them.
You're listening to Radio Yesteryear.
And now another of Max Marston's Crime Doctor dramas, brought to you by the makers of Philip Morris Cigarettes.
What are you doing, Jean?
Mixing Mr. Albertson's medicine. I heard him come in.
Yeah, I just brought him back. Yeah, I'm getting sick of driving that old bird around. No matter how I drive the car, it ain't right. If I drive slow, I get bawled out for crawling along. If I go fast, I get called down for speed.
Well, the doctor said he must be driven carefully and avoid any jolting to him.
I sure could have given him a jolt in the eye this afternoon. You know what he said to me? He said if it wasn't for my wife, he'd fire me today. So now I'm holding down my job because you're working for him.
Look, Bob, we don't have to work in the same place. If you don't like it here, why don't you find yourself another job?
Well, look, baby, the war'll be over soon. There'll be plenty of chauffeurs around looking for jobs. Besides, we've worked in the same places together since we were married, and that's how it's gonna stay.
Jean. Jean.
Yes, sir, I'll be right in. Calling for his medicine. I've got to go.
Didn't Bob tell you I was back?
Yes, sir. It took me a few moments to mix the medicine.
Oh.
Ready for it?
Oh, I'm never ready to swallow the darn stuff.
Oh, come on now. You know you've got to take it. Here.
Oh, well.
Oh.
You should be used to it by now.
You try taking it for a year.
Oof.
Doesn't get any better with time. I'm wondering, too, if it really is doing me any good.
Well, you haven't had an attack in nearly a month now.
Jean, I've been waiting to ask you something, Jean. I don't think Bob's very happy here. I'm sure he's not good for me. His driving makes me nervous. I was wondering, if I decided to let him go, would you feel that you had to leave with him?
No, sir. I like it here.
Thank you, Jean. I'm very pleased to hear that.
Hey, Charlie! Put a little attention down this end of the bar.
I'll be there in a minute, Mac. Are you a saying, Bob?
Yeah, like I was saying, Charlie. You can't depend on women. There's no loyalty among them. Now, you take my wife.
Oh, your wife. So that's what's the matter. Huh?
You know what she's done?
Now what?
She lets the boss fire me and she goes right on working for him. She ain't even unhappy about it.
Oh, gee, Bob, that's tough.
Give me another drink, huh? Make it a double.
Oh, no, drinking ain't gonna bring your wife back, Bob. You know, if she was my wife, I'd go there and get her if I had to drag her up in her hair.
Yeah, and that's right. That's just what I'm gonna do. Drag her out by the hair.
Come on, get in here. Come on, you. Come on, get in there.
Don't have to shove me.
Come on, don't argue with me.
You can't lock me up.
Get in there.
All right.
What's the matter, Riley? Drunk and disorderly.
Sergeant, this is an outrage. A man's got a right to go see his own wife without having the door slammed in his face. That's what she's done. I mean, that's just what she's done.
What did he do?
threw a brick through the window and she wouldn't let him in. What's your name, mister?
What do you want to know for?
I'm signing you in for the night.
Excuse me, Mr. Albertson.
Yes, Jean?
That lawyer who telephoned is here.
Well, ask him to come in.
Will you come in, Mr. Moran?
Thank you.
Don't go, Jean.
Yes, sir.
I presume you're Mr. Albertson?
Yes.
I represent Mr. Mason, this young lady's husband.
Yes. Well, I don't understand, Mr. Moran, why my husband should want you to see Mr. Albertson.
Well, my client believes he has some sort of a grievance against Mr. Albertson. He feels that he's responsible for breaking up his home.
Bob broke it himself by his own conduct.
That would be for a court to determine. Mr. Mason is suffering great anguish of mind. And if Mr. Albertson is in any wise responsible...
Look, Mr. Moran, I consented to see you because I thought I might help to straighten out the situation between Jean and her husband. Jean tells me she will not live with him again. She intends to obtain a divorce.
So I understand. And my client feels, Mr. Albertson, that you have persuaded her to take the step.
That's not true.
I've interested myself in this matter, Mr. Moran, for purely selfish reasons. Mrs. Mason has no evidence with which to obtain a divorce in this state. I've told her that. She insists that she'll go to some other state to obtain it, but she's my nurse and I can't spare her. I told her if she could arrange with her husband for him to obtain the divorce in another state...
Yes.
I'd be willing to pay his expenses and, in addition, give him a sum of money.
Well, Mr. Albertson, that seems like a reasonable suggestion. I'll talk it over with my client.
$3,000. $3,000, is that all you could get out of him, Archie?
Yes, Bob, yes. He says that includes the divorce expenses.
What the old cheapskate.
Well, you better take it, Bob. I got his check. I'll cash it and we'll split it. $1,500 for you, $1,500 for me.
Where do you come in for half?
Look, I could get into a bad jam going up there and posing as a lawyer. I took a big chance.
Maybe I should have got a real lawyer.
No lawyer could do for you what I'm going to do if you sit tight and follow what I tell you. You're not going to renew and you're not going to get any divorce. You're going to lay low for 6 weeks. And if things happen, as I think they will, brother, we're both going to be in the big dark.
Yes?
I just thought I'd phone you and let you know I'm leaving for Reno tonight. I'll be back in 6 weeks with a decree.
Jolly, I'm buying the drinks for the house. I'm celebrating.
Oh, yeah? What?
Hey, Bob. What are you doing in here?
Oh, now, Archie, look
in here.
Fool. You're supposed to be in Reno. Come on, I'm taking you out of here. Proceedings started. We'll keep you informed. Signed, Bob. Yeah, there's the first telegram we'll send her, Bob.
Yeah, but how are you going to send it from Reno?
I got a friend of mine working out there.
Yes?
I'm back from Reno, Jean. I suppose you'll be glad to hear I've got the divorce.
Thank you, Bob. It was nice of you to phone me. What are your plans?
Oh, I've got my plans. Don't worry about me. Goodbye.
Who was it, Jean?
Bob called me. He's back from Reno. He got the divorce. I'm free.
I'm glad to hear it, my dear. Now I feel free to speak to you.
Yes?
I've grown very fond of you, Jean. I know I'm much older than you, but I hope you've grown to like me a little.
I like you a lot, Mr. Albertson.
I'd like to feel that we could be together always. Do you think you care enough for me to be my wife?
What?
Look, there it is. They were married, all right. I told you they'd do it.
They didn't waste any time.
No. Hey, where's that phony divorce? decree you took up to show her.
Oh, I got it.
Well, let me have it.
Oh, I'm going to tear it up right here and now, fling the pieces out the window. Oh, boy, are we sitting pretty.
Before continuing with the Philip Morris crime doctor, you all remember the old saying which goes, for want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, a horse was lost. Such a small difference. But because of it, an important battle in some old-time war was lost. All for the want of a horseshoe nail. Yes, differences sometimes bring tremendous results. For example, in cigarettes. There is weighty scientific proof that Philip Morris cigarettes are vastly different. I refer to the findings of distinguished doctors in repeated clinical tests. Findings which show that when smokers change to Philip Morris, substantially every case of irritation of the nose and throat due to smoking either cleared up completely or definitely improved. These findings were reported in a leading medical journal for the information of doctors. Now it's true. You enjoy Philip Morris for the grand flavor and aroma of the world's finest tobacco. But extra protection is an added enjoyment. In this cigarette, proved less irritating, safer for the nose and throat. No curative power is ever claimed for Philip Morris, but an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Yes, differences change results. Philip Morris' superiority is recognized by eminent medical authorities. No other cigarette can make that statement. We now continue with the Philip Morris crime doctor.
Come in. There's a man to see you, Mrs. Albertson. Who is it, Mary? Mr. Moran. Mr. Moran?
Don't you remember, dear? He's the lawyer who arranged the Reno matter with Bob.
Oh, yes, yes. Ask him to come in.
Yes, ma'am.
Will you go in, please?
Oh, thank you. Oh. Oh, excuse me, Mrs. Albertson. Could I see you alone, please? I have a little matter to discuss.
Well, I'm sure there's nothing we have to discuss. My husband can't hear.
Well, it's going to be rather embarrassing to speak before him.
I'm sure, Mr. Moran, that my wife has no secrets from me.
Very well. The matter I came about concerns Mrs. Albertson's marriage to you, sir.
Yes. What about it?
Well, I learned a very astonishing thing this morning. Your marriage is illegal.
What?
How do you mean?
Bob came to see me the other day. He said he was broke, needed some money. Sort of incidentally, he mentioned that he'd never been to Reno and never obtained a divorce.
Why, that's impossible. I have telegrams he sent me from Reno.
Yes, he said that he had some friend of his working out there to send you the telegrams. I couldn't believe he was speaking the truth, so I wired the clerk of the court out there for a copy of the divorce record. I got his answer this morning, and here it is.
May I see it?
Oh, certainly, Mr. Elson.
No record of Mason versus Mason in the court files.
I thought it was my duty to bring the facts to your knowledge, Mrs. Albertson.
I can't understand Bob doing a thing like that.
No, I couldn't understand it either at first, but I see his purpose now. Over the telephone this morning, he used the word bigamy.
Bigamy? He must be out of his mind. He showed Jean the divorce decree.
I had him come here on purpose to show it to me.
Well, if he ever showed you such a decree, Mrs. Albertson, I'm sure it was not genuine.
But this is shocking, Mr. Moran. What can we do about it?
Sorry, I can't advise you. I can only tell you that I've had great difficulty in preventing Bob from complaining to the authorities.
You mean that he is contemplating making a charge of bigamy against my wife?
He feels his wife wronged him, and he's desperate for money, Mr. Albertson.
Oh, that's it. He sent you up here to arrange another settlement.
Oh, I'm simply acting in the capacity of a friend.
Whose friend?
I am sorry for Mrs. Albertson.
I can't understand Bob needing money this soon.
$3,000 doesn't last long these days.
Well, did he tell you what he did with the additional $47,000 that I paid him?
What?
I thought you knew. The day he got his divorce, I paid him the additional money. to round out the $50,000 I said I'd let him have.
Oh, well, when did you make that deal with him?
Why, I spoke to him before he presumably left for Reno. I made him the offer to make it worth his while to expedite the divorce.
Certainly all news to me, yes, sir. I'm going to see Bob right away. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Moran.
Dear, I didn't know you paid Bob all that money.
Neither did I.
But you told Mr. Moran.
Yes, I know, dear. It's very obvious he and Bob are working in cahoots. Well, when they get through fighting over the money Bob didn't get, I think we'll have all the facts in back of their duplicity.
Put that gun away. I tell you, the guy's a liar. I never got no 47 grand.
You're going to pay me my half share or not?
How many times must I tell you? All I got was the dough you brought.
How many times must I tell you? You're a liar.
Why would I double-cross
you? To chip me out of my share. Now, for the last time, are you going to pay me or not?
Now, look, I...
Yes or no?
I'm trying to tell
you... Yes or no?
I can't pay you what I...
I'm giving it to you straight, Inspector. I shot him in self-defense. Man's got a right to shoot in self-defense.
Yes, that's right. He has, Moran, if his life is in danger.
My life is in danger, all right. You'd think yours was too, Inspector, if a man stood 4 feet away from you pointing a gun at you.
I'd like to ask you, Moran.
Yes, Dr. Ordway.
Just where were you standing, and where was your friend Bob at the time of the shooting?
I was standing right over there near the wall. Bob was about in the middle of the room.
How did he come to be pointing a gun at you?
He had a quarrel over money. He got angry and suddenly pulled a gun and fired. The bullet passed over my shoulder and lodged in the wall. Before he could fire a second shot, I had my gun out and let him have it. He fell to the floor. I ran out to call a policeman, but there were people in the hall, and they followed me down the street till I found a cop. And that's the truth, Mr. Crime Doctor, whether you believe me or not.
Jackson.
Yes, Inspector.
Jackson, when you got here, what did you find?
The dead man was lying in the middle of the room. According to the medical examiner, a .32 caliber bullet had shattered his spine and lodged in his lung.
Uh-huh.
A .38 caliber pistol was lying near his hand, and a second pistol, .32 caliber, was on the floor near the wall. One shot had been fired from each of the guns.
Okay. Jackson, what was the caliber of the bullet in the wall?
That was a .38.
And how far from the dead man's hand would you say the .38 caliber pistol was lying?
Oh, I should say about an inch from the right hand.
How far from the wall was the .32 caliber pistol lying?
The butt of the pistol was touching the wall.
Touching the... In what direction was the barrel pointing?
Pointing towards the dead man.
Let's see. Jackson, did you question any of the people who heard the shot?
Yes, sir. They all say they heard two shots.
Uh-huh.
Some say there was a difference of 5 seconds between the two shots. Others say the second shot came fully 10 or 15 seconds after the first.
Oh, indeed. Well, what do you say about that, Moran?
I fired right after Bob fired at me. I didn't count the seconds.
Now, Moran...
Yes, Dr. Ordway?
You told the inspector that you and the dead man quarreled over money.
That's right. I accused Bob of holding out on me in a deal we were in. He denied it, and I called him a liar. That's what started the fight.
What part of a deal was it?
I acted for him in negotiating a settlement for his domestic affairs. He and his wife agreed to get a divorce so she could marry the man she was working for. Bob didn't have any money, and I arranged for the settlement with Mr. Albertson. That's the wife's employer.
How much did Mr. Albertson pay?
$50,000. Bob and I agreed we were to split the money, 50-50. He claimed he only got $3,000.
Is that why you killed him?
I told you why I killed him. In self-defense.
Nevertheless, Moran, the fact remains that your life never was in danger.
There's a bullet hole right there in the wall to prove he fired at me.
No, Moran, that shot was never fired at you. You wanted it to appear that way as confirmation of the story you thought up. But unfortunately for you, you overlooked one little detail that proves conclusively your shooting of Bob was an act of cold-blooded murder.
Ladies and gentlemen, in exactly 59 seconds, Dr. Ordway, the Philip Morris crime doctor, will be back to tell you the little detail overlooked by the suspect. In the meantime, maybe it happened yesterday or today. You asked for Philip Morris, and your dealer hasn't yet. He can't help it. Neither can we, because we're providing all the Philip Morris humanly possible. But perhaps tomorrow, your dealer will have Philip Morris. The day is coming when, once again, when you call for Philip Morris, you'll get Philip Morris. And once again, you'll smoke and enjoy the cigarette that gives extra pleasure plus extra protection. Remember, too, that package of Philip Morris you failed to get today is gone to some fighting American overseas. It's a contribution you are making to the comfort of some man or woman in our armed forces. So, always remember, Johnny's call for Philip Morris, made by Americans, for Americans, to suit American taste. Philip Morris, America's finest popular price cigarette. We now return you to Dr. Ordway, the Philip Morris crime doctor.
Well, now, Dr. Ordway, you mentioned a little detail that was overlooked by this suspect, Archie Moran.
Yes, Inspector. He made a fatal mistake in telling how the murdered man was killed. The facts contradict the story told by the suspect.
The facts are just as I told them, Dr. Ordway.
In order to fire at you, Bob would have had to stand facing you.
Well, who said he wasn't facing me?
He couldn't have been, Moran, because the bullet that killed him shattered his spine and lodged in his lungs. That means the bullet entered his back. After you killed him, you heard people in the hallway, so you got Bob's gun and fired a shot into the wall.
I don't care what you say, Doctor.
Hold it, Moran. Hold it, will you?
Officer, I want to. I told you to go right in. I'm Mrs. Albertson.
Oh, yes, yes. Come right in, Mrs. Albertson. I had one of my men telephone to you.
Yes, he asked me to come down here, Inspector. He said Bob had been killed.
Yes, that's true. Mrs. Albertson, do you know this man?
Yes, he's Mr. Moran. He came to our house today and said a divorce which Bob obtained was fraudulent. He hinted Bob needed money.
Yes, and you bear me out, Mrs. Albertson. Your husband told me he had paid Bob $47,000 besides the $3,000 he gave me for Bob.
Well, $50,000 was a large settlement to make.
Oh, my husband didn't pay the other $47,000.
What's that?
He only told Mr. Moran he had.
Well, why did he tell him that?
Thought if he could get two thieves quarreling among themselves, the truth might come out.
Hey, wait a minute. You mean Bob never got the $47,000?
No, he didn't.
Why, that old liar, I...
Now, hold it, Moran, hold it. It's my duty to warn you anything you say may be used against you. Because pending further investigation, I'm holding you on suspicion of murder.
This is Johnny again, returning now to the thousands of store windows and counters all over America. Look for me. I'll be waiting for you. Come in and...
Goodbye, Johnny. We'll be seeing you in the windows and on the counters during the week and hearing you over this same station next Sunday at this same time. Be sure to tune in next week for another of Max Martin's thrilling crime doctor dramas, brought to you by Philip Morris. All names and characters used on this program are fictitious, and any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Here's some good news for all smokers. It's about that grand pipe mixture, Revelation, the pipe tobacco you can inhale. Thousands who never smoked pipes before are turning to Revelation and find they can inhale it just like cigarettes. Ask for Revelation, only 15 cents. Join us again next week at this time for the Philip Morris Crime Doctor. Listen also on Friday night when Johnny presents his Days to the Ignorant, brought to you over these same stations. When you buy a poppy, your money goes toward helping men disabled in this war and the last, and to their families. Buy a poppy tomorrow, and wear it as a glowing tribute to the men who sacrificed so much for you. This is Ken Roberts saying goodnight for Philip Morris. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
These programs have come to you from Radio Yesteryear.